I'm William English, and you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And today's guest, we have Patrick Sutherland with us, documentary photographer and sound recordist. So good afternoon, Patrick.
Hi.
I think you started out as an anthropologist, in fact, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did a degree in anthropology.
Okay. Yeah. And so your first photographic project, I think, was something in Somerset.
I did a book on the Somerset Levels, yeah.
Right.
It was the first kind of serious documentary photography project I worked on.
Uh-huh.
It kind of established what I wanted to do as a photographer, which was to work kind of, you know, long-term on big projects over an extended period of time.
Yeah. So when was that? How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh, that was 1980... I started about 81, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No, I started in 83.
Okay.
I got a tiny Arts Council grant, worked on something for about sort of 2 years and made a book and a travelling exhibition and stuff.
Yes, I read somewhere something about you when you applied for the grant. It was described as for young Welsh artists or something, is that right?
Yes. And I remember writing back and saying, I'm really, really pleased that you're giving me the money, but I don't feel that I'm an artist, I'm not Welsh and I'm not particularly young, but otherwise I fit the category perfectly.
And it was in Somerset?
Well, I was living in Wales when I applied for it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, fair enough. All right. Okay.
A princely sum of £150.
Yeah.
Which was great. I got it.
Right. Okay. And today you're here to discuss Hirip music from the Spiti region of northwest India.
That's right.
And what's your connection with Spiti? How did this first come about?
Well, I first went to Spiti in 1993. I'm a documentary photographer. I'm interested in lots of different things, and one of the things I was interested in was, you know, what was happening in Tibet and the kind of exile Tibetan community. And a very old friend of mine is somebody I traveled to India with as a kind of long-haired hippie in the 70s. Has become a monk in the Dalai Lama's community.
He was a long-haired hippie, or you both were?
We both were. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And he's now a very, very serious kind of monk, has, you know, taken his vows and lives in Dharamsala in the Dalai Lama's community. And he was going to be traveling to Spiti with some people to try and set up an educational project. Spiti is a high-altitude desert valley right on the kind of border of occupied Tibet. It's actually inside India, which so it hasn't sort of suffered the kind of degradation of the what's happened in Tibet itself since the Chinese occupation. But it was sort of off limits to outsiders for a long time. And we traveled there in 1993, and I went there on what I thought would be a single trip to make some photographs and to take some photographs for a school to raise funding. Mm. And I kind of fell in love with the place and have been going back ever since.
Hmm.
And working primarily as a photographer, but, you know, started working in terms of sound recordings.
Yeah. So what was the track we heard at the beginning of the program?
This is a fanfare played by the Hirip. The Hirip are specialist musicians. They're referred to as professional musicians. There's a number of different groups of people in Spiti who play music and sing songs and perform. But the Hirip are unique in that they are paid for this, and they're professional musicians, and they're of lower caste status, whereas most of the other performers are of the, you know, belong to the main population.
Mm-hmm.
And that track was one of a number of different fanfares that the Hirip perform. So these are basically kind of sonic honorings and respectful greetings of particular categories of people. So that if you're in a big community gathering and one of the aristocracy walks in or is known to be arriving, they play a particular greeting for the, called, you know, Ponbi Lanma, for the Nono, the aristocrat. Or if a lama or a group of lamas walks in, they greet them sonically.
Yeah.
So they're a kind of, one of the central things about Hirip music is it's about the members of the lower caste sort of honouring and respectfully marking out the kind of social hierarchy and their social superiors.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
So as professional musicians, they earn a living by sort of being constantly in attendance, as it were? They're always ready to play at a moment's notice?
They're supposed to be ready to play. They kind of belong, they used to be landless. In fact, there are two stratas of the Hirip. The lower caste, the lowest caste, the Beda, who sing and play the kind of the shawm, the oboe-like instrument, belong to the lowest caste. And they used to be landless and they used to be beggars. And they actually used to sort of belong to the community itself. And they ought to play whenever they're asked to play. But actually, the population of Hirip music is declining very, very rapidly. But also, there's also kind of lots of different kind of castes.
Well, just the musicians, or the whole population is declining?
Just the musicians. The lower caste population is about, you know, just less than 10% of the whole population. But the number of people who are actually performing music as hirup is very, very clearly declining. Not just because people are sort of dying out, but people are not passing this tradition on to their children. But also, in some cases, people are refusing to perform.
All right.
Which is quite an interesting, because of kind of, you know, social issues to do with kind of caste and their position and respect and honour, and the kind of new potential within modernising Spiti.
So is this music is specific to this region? You wouldn't hear this music elsewhere? Or?
No, the it's a variation on a kind of tradition which has roots in the Ladakhi and Tibetan ceremonial court music. And I've never—I don't know anybody who's kind of studied Spiti music yet and related it to those traditions. But it's part of a kind of wider tradition. But actually, the songs that are performed in Spiti are Spitian songs rather than Ladakhi songs. And the actual kind of genre of music—that kind of particular mixture of shawm and drum—is pretty widespread. So there are similar kinds of musical groups in sort of Pakistan and maybe in Iran and maybe as far as Mongolia. But this particular local tradition is different from everything that's around it in subtle ways.
Should we hear another track?
Yeah.
What's this? What's the next one?
The next is from a pingri in Kibba. Kibba is one of the highest villages in Spiti, and this is a special party. It's a kind of birthday party. It's a party to mark the presentation of the son and heir of a big household.
Right. Pingri. And they're all, the tracks are all very short. Are these extracts, or would they
all extracts. Spiti musical performances tend to be extremely long. A single recording of this is a sort of dance we're about to hear from, recorded live in a village hall, and this probably went on for sort of 20 minutes.
Okay. So that track is called Pingri at Kibba.
Well, that's a description of the occasion, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Most hirup music is kind of related to occasions. They don't really have titles. The title, if you ask somebody what the song is called, they will give you the first line of it.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes very long and hard to translate.
And are they improvising, or can they repeat the same piece of music again? Or?
It is improvised. I mean, the basic themes, like much improvised music, I guess, they're working around specific themes.
Yeah.
And that last section is a sort of section, this is music to dance to.
Uh-huh.
So this is in a very, very crowded village hall, and there's a circle of people dancing, and it's the end stages of the dancing. So they're dancing very, very, very fast, and the hirup are playing sort of faster and faster and faster until everybody drops out. And when they drop out, they all give the hirup money.
Oh, right.
And there's a kind of thing of whether or not you can keep up with the musician. You know,
yeah.
And this will go on for quite a long time. So it's very kind of intense performance.
And how many musicians are in each kind of group?
There's usually three or four in a single party. So it's usually one drum, a sonar, which is the kind of the shawm, the oboe-like instrument, and then a couple of frame drums, which are like large bodhran or tambourines. And these are beaten by the women, who also do the singing. But if you go to a big party, sometimes they'll double up and have two groups of musicians. So sometimes they'll have two drummers. So it's really, really kind of thundering music.
Mm.
And the sonar players will often play in relay. And occasionally they will play together. And one of the recordings today has got two sonars playing together.
It says here there's something about the drummers in theory belonging to a higher caste. Yeah. So there is even a hierarchy within the musicians.
Yeah.
And what's the? Is there a rationale for that, or is it just something that's happened over the centuries? Or
I don't know whether there's a rationale. I mean, I think what is interesting is that the lower castes are regarded as being kind of unclean and polluting.
Right.
And it's quite common these days to see members of other groups playing the drum that the higher of the two lower castes play. But you would never, ever see anybody play a sonar, because a sonar is sort of an instrument you put in your mouth.
Oh, right.
And, you know, to share body fluids with somebody of the lower caste would be extremely polluting. I mean, there is actually belief in Spiti that if you're eating with somebody from the lower caste and they accidentally spit on you, or if they spit on you deliberately, then that makes you lower caste. So there's quite a lot of kind of fear of pollution that's still there amongst even the kind of quite educated people in Spiti.
Right. Okay, well, let's have another track. What is this one? Is called? Is this Begging Song?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the singers in Spiti used to be landless and they used to be beggars. So a generation ago, two or three times a year, a group of Hirip would come round the big houses of the village singing and begging, and they'd actually be requesting, barley, the staple foodstuff in Spiti, fodder for the horses, old clothing, or whatever. So that, you know, their position within the social hierarchy is right at the bottom, and they were actually kind of landless beggars for quite a long time. And this is a begging song. They no longer do this begging. The Indian government, central government, and state government support has meant that they all have a little bit of land, and they have some kind of, income from the state.
Oh, really? Okay.
So they survive, they don't have to beg,
but
they're still kind of the bottom of the heap. And the begging song is still played within a kind of general medley, but they no longer beg.
Are they on the same, they're considered to be on the same level as butchers, is that true? Is that right?
They're
on the same caste level.
Yeah, there are two castes, and the castes, the lower of the lower castes are butchers and musicians, and they're the better, and the higher of the lower castes are blacksmiths and musicians.
Right.
Both butchering and blacksmiths are seen as being kind of dirty and polluting
jobs. Yeah. Okay, so this is a begging song. Okay. Now, the Hirip groups have disappeared completely from six villages in Spiti in recent years, leaving groups in only 10 villages. So it is widely recognised that these musicians are rapidly disappearing. This is from your notes. But you've actually produced an amazing book about it, haven't you? Spiti, the Forbidden Valley, which was a book of photographs.
Yeah.
When did you publish this?
Published in, I think, 2000. Was it
2000? Okay.
Yeah, several years ago. Yeah.
And at that time it was called the Forbidden Valley. But presumably progress has changed this somewhat. Or?
Well, it was because of where it sits on the Tibetan border. It was off limits for outsiders. It's part of what India calls its inner line.
Yeah.
In 62, the Chinese invaded parts of India. They took over a large part of Ladakh, and there were border wars. And so the whole kind of border with China, occupied Tibet, is India's inner line. It was very, very kind of politically sensitive. So from the 60s till 92, it was sort of pretty off limits for outsiders. A few people got in, but no tourists get in.
Uh-huh.
In 93, it got opened up to outsiders. So now you can just go as a tourist without generally speaking, without
permits. Is it easy to get to now? Or?
Still pretty difficult, because it's high altitude and the roads are unstable and get blocked by snow and landslides and stuff.
Because the Chinese are building a railway to Lhasa, aren't they?
They've built it.
Oh, is it finished?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's bringing in huge numbers of people.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And is this the fate of Spiti as well, eventually?
Well, just building a decent road is turning out to be very, very difficult, because it's a very, very unstable terrain. They've talked about building an airport, because there's an airport in Ladakh, but there's that's been dropped.
Yes.
The local state government and the local people in Spiti want to have increased tourism.
Oh,
but,
really?
But actually, the infrastructure is still pretty weak and unstable, and the road system is unreliable.
Right.
So it's still hard to get into. You have to be determined to get into.
There was a program about Lhasa on the TV the other night. Did you see it?
I was
absolutely shocked, actually, by the level of the tourism and so on. I had no idea. I still had this sort of mental image of it being, the roof of the world sort of... imagery, but Spiti is probably still relatively unspoilt, or is it kind of going pretty much the same way?
It's changing very, very quickly, actually. I mean, the local people and see tourism as being a major, major benefit. So kind of, if you go to Kaza, which is it's a large village, the main sort of administrative centre in Spiti, there's a rash of kind of modern concrete hotels. There seem to be more hotels than tourists sometimes.
Oh, right.
There's a lot of sort of investment and belief in this as the future.
Okay. All right. What have you got next for us? What's this?
Track four is a car, which is a dance. It recorded at a wedding in Thabo.
Uh-huh.
And these are kind of slow dances done, again, to rather like the fanfares, done to honour specific groups of society. So there used to be a car dance for lamas, which is no longer performed. There's a car especially for the aristocrats. There's one for women, and this is the men's car.
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to fade that one out because it's a rather prolonged and slow track. Where do we proceed from this, Patrick? What are we going to...
Let's go to track number six, I think, which is...
Track number six will be next.
Yeah.
All right.
And what this is it's another of these sort of sonic greetings, but again in the kind of context in which it's performed. This is a preparation for a wedding ceremony, mm-hmm. and it's the end of a recording where an oracular medium in Spiti, they're called Lapdags, is gone into possession. He's been possessed by a local village deity. So at the beginning of the track, it's quite a short track. At the beginning of the track, you hear a voice, and that's the voice of the deity, not the person whose body has been possessed. Then you hear a blast of Hirup music, and then you hear a kind of slightly orgasmic sound of sort of three notes, and it's the sort of deity leading the body of the Lapdag.
All right.
And what's happening in this recording is that basically the Hirup honour and sonically honour particular categories of people in society, but they also honour the gods. So what this music is doing is it's recognising the fact that the deity has arrived in the room. It's a kind of fanfare. There's one at the beginning to say he's arrived. There's also a kind of fanfare to sort of say the deity is leaving. So it's a kind of sonic, honorific fanfare for a non-corporeal presence.
Okay. How did you record these, by the way? Just as a matter of that people might be interested to know what the technical side of it. What sort of equipment have you been using with?
Well, I started off with a very, very simple kind of mini disc recorder and a relatively inexpensive handheld mic.
Uh-huh.
And I've put two or three of these kits back into Spiti, so I'm getting local people to be involved in the process of recording.
Because you were originally you are a photographer,
yeah.
But you sort of moved more towards sound recording, or you're going to do them together, or
I'm sort of doing both. But what was interesting is I started making sound recordings in 1998. I made my first recordings. In fact, the recording at the Pingree was one of the first kind of trip I made sound recordings on. And I did a program, in fact, with Resonance FM with Peter Cusack a few years ago.
Right.
And after that, I started taking the idea much more seriously, and I approached the British Library, who've given me some funding, and I'm working locally with some people in Spiti to try and use sound recordings just to sort of generate an understanding of what is disappearing and what its value is.
Yeah.
And I've been involved in raising funding for a local society in Spiti, which is trying to find new markets for the Hirrup particularly, but also to run music workshops and perhaps have kind of concerts for tourists and that kind of stuff.
Right. So it might make the music more sustainable. It might continue as a result of this encouragement or interest from outside interest.
It is very, very threatened, and I think that it may disappear quite quickly if it doesn't.
Yeah.
Some sort of
it seems like it's obviously threatened by modern music, which we're going to play a bit of
right
towards
the end. Yeah. Yeah.
Do the local people want the modern music? Is there a demand for it? Or I noticed one of the photographs, strangely enough, one of the photographs in the book shows a very old sort of person sitting in very humble surroundings, but with a photograph of Madonna on the wall.
They're part of the international modern world. They have the internet.
Yeah.
It's not very fast. They
right.
have satellite phones. They don't work all that well, but they're, uh-huh. they're plugged into that. And the young men, in particular, travel outside the valley and are aware of the modern world. So they want to have motor cars, and they want to have tourism, and they want to have modern healthcare and modern education.
Mm.
But they also, they watch. They all have satellite TV. They watch Bollywood films and of course, modern political programs. But they're very influenced, particularly by things like VCDs, video CDs, which come in from Ladakh. And Ladakhi VCDs are modern Ladakhi pop music, which is very much sort of youth-oriented. It's sort of young couples in westernized dress, driving around the landscape, having a good time and singing to each other and dancing
right.
in the landscape
right.
in western clothing, leather jackets and sunglasses and stuff. And this is very
important. Okay. What's this next track? Which track do we want now? Track six, is it?
Yeah.
This is the Oracular Medium. That was brief. They made contact very quickly, but
that's the end of the recording. The recording
right.
is about most of my recordings. They're quite long. It's probably a 20-minute recording. So it's
I see. Okay,
fill the whole program with one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That would be interesting. Actually, it might be nice to play one of those in its full length. Okay, well, we're talking to Patrick Sutherland about Hirrup music from the Spiti region of Northwest India. We're coming towards the end of the programme. In fact, this last track is the longest, isn't it? It's 3 minutes and 17 seconds, and this is called Kinnori Pop.
Yeah.
So is this the Western influence on Hirrup music, or what have we got here?
Well, what it is, it's the alternative. It's the sort of alternative sort of musical future for the events at which Hirrup play. I mean, I think one of the things I probably haven't said is that Hirrup play at a whole kind of range of big communal events, at weddings, at kind of marriage arrangements, because they're arranged marriages, at various different festivals. And they have a kind of repertoire of very specific songs that they play at these occasions. weddings is the biggest sort of cycle of songs. But at each of these occasions, they also play special dances like the car dance, and then they will play more general dance music. So people will dance for sort of, you know, maybe 5 or 6 hours in a really crammed village hall. So they're kind of big, big cultural and communal events.
Yeah.
And the last time I was in Spiti, which is sort of October, November last year, I went to two events where the local Hirit musician, for various reasons, had been banned from performing because her son refuses to play, and the community has pressurized her by banning her and taking her livelihood away from her. And they've replaced her with kind of, you know, electric pop music from a neighboring valley.
Right.
And I went to another a big wedding where the Hirit musician played, but they alternated with this electric pop music.
Right.
So sometimes they have a kind of, you know, a disco. And sometimes they have electric music.
Gosh. Okay.
And it's quite shocking to witness this. But,
yes.
You know, potentially this music will disappear very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And the thing about the pop music, which I guess is different, is that modern music is perhaps more democratic than old Spiti music. Old Spiti music, you know, you'd play a dance and the dance would be for a particular group of people.
Mm.
Whereas the, you know, a Kanuri dance or Kanuri pop music, everybody just joins one huge circle and dances. This doesn't include the lower caste, but includes like every strata of the main population.
You sound almost in favor of it.
I don't like it,
no.
I have to say. I mean, I love Hirit music. It's quite strange, but I love it. And Kanuri pop music is, I don't know. Listen to it.
Okay.
It doesn't sound the same.
All right. Which track? This is track 8, isn't it?
No. It's track number 11.
11. Okay, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and this week we had Patrick Sutherland with us to talk about Hirit music from the Spiti region. So this is the Kanuri pop music, which we can still hear in the background. Is there any trace of Hirit music in here anywhere, or is it just
Not at all.
It's completely imported. It's a sort of
Kanuri is a sort of slightly much more kind of modernized valley. It's a neighboring valley.
Yeah.
This recording sounds very, very distorted. It's actually a very good recording of the actual sound. It's a very, very kind of heavily, sort of fuzzily distorted, amplified sound.
And how
sounds slightly Cajun at times.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Do the Hirit musicians resent it? Are they feeling a bit peeved because of this infiltration?
They sat through it looking utterly shocked
at the time. Yeah.
And in fact, when they were performing, one of the recorders I've got, when the Hirit were performing, these people were kind of warming up in the background, so they kept on interrupting the Hirit musicians. Yeah.
And is it putting them out of work? Are they going to end up sort of...
Potentially it might put them out of work completely. If the community decided to have this instead of Hirit music, which 2 years ago I'd say was unthinkable, but now I've witnessed sort of three occasions where they've been present and pushed the Hirit out.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll mean they don't have an income at all.
Right. So yours will be quite a valuable archive in a way.
I hope it's not a kind of extinct tradition. I hope the tradition survives, and we're doing things to try and sort of support that. But potentially, it will be the recordings of an extinct tradition.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.